Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
This is episode 508, BGA Awards 2024. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we are back and we are talking about the latest, the greatest, the 2024est BGA Awards.
Yes, yeah, all the best games of the last year. These are the games that we've been playing, we've been talking about, we reviewed. Some of them we haven't even reviewed yet because they came out later in the year and we were talking about our top 100. There's a lot of amazing stuff here. So this is fun every year. We also have a special twist this year.
Ooh, the twist.
Where we asked the listeners, you, listener.
I like those people.
What your favorite games are of the year. And we have our listeners' choice picks for each of these categories. So we're going to talk about our favorite games of the year from each of these 10 categories. But we're also going to talk about your favorite games of the year.
Very cool. Yeah, we love that. We want to have you as much involved as possible. And for the coming new year, even more so. But we'll talk more about that on a later episode.
Many announcements coming up. Yes. Stay tuned.
Anthony, we've been doing this for many years. The BGA Awards, huge in the industry. Everyone looks to us about making the top choices. No one's moving. Nothing's happening in board gaming news because they're waiting for this moment. And it's finally come.
Yeah. The entire hobby has paused. And it's not because it is currently December 27th and the whole world has paused. It is because they want to know what we think about board games.
Seems about right.
Yeah, no, legit. Like, and I feel like, I don't know, our awards always feel different. I don't know what it is. And this is not backpatting of any kind. It's just they super match what you and I like, but also what our audience is interested in based on what they tell us. And that's why we want to do the listeners awards this year of like, what are you all interested in and how much does it align with what we're talking about? It's fascinating having seen the results. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Excellent. Yeah, no. And again, we've had a very good year in tabletop gaming. We talked a little bit about this last week and there's a good diversity of games, good diversity of expansions, good diversity of re-implementations. And now the culmination of all those great things comes together so that you have the best idea of what to be playing in the new coming year. Of course, there'll be new games for 2025. But in the meantime, maybe you picked up some of these in the holiday season. Maybe you got some gift cards to pick things up. Maybe you're going to a meetup, you know, over the holiday season. I mean, we're on the prefaces where it's going to be 2025 when this episode comes out. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you all have some time to rest, relax, and get some great games to the table. And with that said, Anthony, let's get to the great games.
Let's do it. All right. So we kick off our awards every year with a game that is not a board game, but a digital implementation of a board game.
Good start there, guy.
Heck yeah. That's how we do it. So these are board games that have come out in previous years, but this year they hit the digital scape. Now, most of these are on digital for the first time. Sometimes they're a little bit different or new versions. And we want to talk about the best digital implementations in 2024.
And we will also say, too, that all of these games are excellent. And that is That is a big thing to say, considering where we came from as far as tabletop games online.
Yeah, digital games were not always excellent. No. Sometimes they were terrible. Recently, they were terrible.
Yes.
We've had very recent years in which they were terrible. So this was a very good year. And I will say a couple of these are like early access releases. We are including those if there are things you can go and purchase and play.
Sure.
Because within reason, like if something's early access and it plays terribly, we're not going to nominate it.
No.
Everything we've nominated, we like.
Yes.
But these are four games that we feel like really represent the digital landscape of games this year.
Yeah, it's also another great way to get people involved in tabletop games. Maybe they have a Steam account out there or something else where they were playing these kind of games. And like, hey, we know that you're playing all these AAA titles. Check out this game. Hey, mm-hmm. It turns out to be a board game. You can play this in person. There's a physical version of that. And you can't say that about every video game out there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a weird space that we're in where if a game is really good, it will get converted to a digital format eventually.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that was not the case back in the day, and now it is. It's weird. All right, so we have kind of an interesting mix here. We have four games. Three of them are from the same developer. So
see what's going on there.
There is definitely a theme here where a developer has realized their sweet spot and what they're doing in the world. They're making a lot of money on this. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But first up, we have Mindbug Online. This was published in November by Kasaki Studios out of Germany. And it is a digital implementation of the Richard Garfield card game, which is a small deck of cards. You're both drawing from that same deck of cards. And it's like a Magic-like, but very, very, very simplified without like the randomness of like packs and the big sprawl set of cards. We've talked about Mindbug in the past. It's a fantastic little quick card game. It's fun. It's back and forth. And the short, like, you know, targeted nature of the game makes it more interesting. A digital version is very good. So that is our first nominee. The other three nominees, again, are from Direwolf Digital, which has kind of become the go-to developer for digital implementations of board games. If you want your game converted to digital, you go to Direwolf because they do a very good job. So Clank is the first one. This one came out earlier this year, back in October. Classic deck building game. It's gone fully digital. This is the full release. Cascadia is in early access. This one came out in November. Played a bunch of this. We talked about it on the podcast pretty recently. And then Arc Nova just came out in December around PAX. Also early access, fully released next year. They've already talked about a bunch of releases they have coming next year, including Arx, which just came out.
Wow.
So Direwolf is just loading up on stuff to release in the upcoming years, but several big ones coming out here at the end of 2024.
Yeah, all these are great games, and Direwolf does a great job on top of everything else. And it's also very good to have Mindbug up there, too, because those kind of quick card games, like, they're meant so you can play off your phone or, you know, play them online as quickly as possible. So
yeah, it's a great idea. The main thing I wish for like Mindbug is that it was like primarily a mobile game. I feel like it would do better in mobile. And maybe that's part of the plan, but like a Steam game is great, but let's see that on my phone.
Yeah. You don't want to drag around your Steam Deck.
No, I do sometimes. And I'm like, this thing's too big.
Can't have it all, man.
No, I can't have it all. Playing Gaia Project on my Steam Deck on the airplane. I'm like, this is a weird world I live in now. Oh, man. So, like, which games here do you think stand out for you?
I mean, there's a lot of good choices here. Clank is a great implementation. I really enjoyed playing that. Arc Nova is fantastic, if for no other reason than you can actually get to the table.
Yeah.
It's a big game to get to the table. It's a lot of components to get to the table. And they do a very good job with the graphics there. And again, I really tremendously appreciate the fact that they just played it straight right down the line. And they were like, you know what you like? Like, the board game. Yes. Well, guess what? What? The digital version is just the board game. Excellent. So, all of these are quite good. I think the one that works best, I won't say it's the best game out of the choices here, but I think I will say that it's the best digital implementation of these board games out here, Anthony. And I think it's probably going to be Cascadia.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And for me, it's the best game too, but that's irrelevant to this conversation. Mm-hmm. It is early access. It just came out in the end of October. They're not completely done with it, but I haven't run into a single bug yet. I played the game probably 30 times. No bugs, no issues. Ark Nova, still kind of buggy. Pretty recent, December 5th. And, you know, Dune Imperium was in early access for almost a year. Yes. And didn't have a ton of bugs, but when they got it was done, and it's great. Cascadia feels the same. I think we talked about Dune Imperium last year. Technically, that game didn't come out 1.0 until March of this year.
Wow.
But we gave it our award last year because it was so good.
Yeah. Great job.
Cascadia feels the same for me. It's done. It's there. It's amazing. It has a lot of like solo challenges and stuff to run through.
Mm-hmm.
Things that aren't really in the base game, the cardboard game. And it's still one of my favorite abstract games of all time.
Excellent. Well, so, Anthony, of course, that means our best digital implementation goes to Cascadia.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Our listener's choice, like we said, we're going to give our listener's choice rundown for each of these. The listeners picked Mindbug.
Ooh.
So going off the beaten path, not Direwolf Digital, which is kind of running the show these days. But Mindbug, also very good.
Excellent game.
All right. Next category here, getting into the cardboard, we have best family game. So these are lighter games, mm-hmm. things that you would play with family members who don't normally play games, with children, with at the holidays. Sure. So recent things maybe you got to the table. So we have five games here that really kind of fit that bill. First up, we have Little Alchemists from CGE. Yeah, they're Little Alchemists.
They're adorable.
We met with CGE at PAX, and they told us this game exists because the designer wanted to play the game that they had designed with their children. And Alchemist is absolutely not child-friendly. So,
well, unless it's Full Metal Alchemist and that it was child-friendly. Well, it wasn't child-friendly.
No, it's not child-friendly at all, man.
That ended bad for those two kids playing Alchemist.
Bad things happen. So Little Alchemist is a campaign-style game where you unlock stuff over time. You get stickers, you unlock different boxes. It goes up to, like, level 7. Level 1 is very simple. You could play this with, like, a 7, 8-year-old. The only potential issue there is just like the app integration and using the technology and the kids having to manage that, you know, cause they don't want you to see what you're doing. But I've had a lot of really good luck here so far with my child. Harmonies, one of the great abstract games of the year. All these abstract games tend to do well with kids. This one in particular has been a hit in my house. It's animals, it's beautiful artwork. It's a lot of fun, like logic style puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Cities from Phil Walker Harding is a game in which you feel like you're making a ton of different decisions, but the game guides you along these different rails and paths to ensure that you know what decisions are available to you. So yes, you're picking from these 8 different things every round, but you have to pick from these 8 different things every round. It's just the order in which you do it. And you build out your own little city, which is a fantastic little experience. Rebel Princess, a very clever, fun, interesting take on the trick-taking genre. With the whole idea of like this princess who doesn't want to be saved, can do it on her own. Very fun, very cool. My daughter's had a lot of fun with that. And then Nekajima, which we played earlier this year. We talked about it back at the beginning of the year, in which you are hanging cats from power lines.
It's a real thing.
It's super stressful, but it's something anybody can play. It's a dexterity game, but yeah. It's also super stressful.
It's a high level dexterity game for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, all of these quite good. It's nice to see that Little Alchemist is out because Alchemist, the big game, was kind of complex and a little fussy with the app. So it's nice to see this kind of re-implemented in a way that a lot of people can play at the table. Harmonies. I just won't even say it's good artwork. I think it's so uniquely beautiful. Kind of artwork and the production is quite well done.
I feel like part of that is coming off of Ark Nova, which is completely uninspired. It's just
isn't weird
pictures of animals that looks like nothing. It's nothing, and you get Harmonies, which is like so much art direction.
Yes,
so pretty.
It really is, and it's very unique to say the least. Cities seems to be like something that could play with everybody.
yeah,
kids, family, adults. And I think it's definitely one of those games where everyone will sit down and enjoy it. In fact, our friend Game Master Dave was talking about he was playing that with his wife this week.
It's got a lot of emergent complexity. Like the base level of the game, you could teach to anybody down to like 7 years old. But if you really want to play it well, you could really dig deep into it.
Nice. I like that. Rebel Princess, I love myself a good trick-taking game. The artwork here is a lot of fun. And it has a really cool message that's not standard in tabletop gaming. So I love that idea. It also plays a little bit like Hearts, which again, I'm a big fan of Hearts. And as you mentioned, Nekojima was our friend Chris and Aaron had brought that to the table. And I still make a fist and wave it in the air every time I think about that game because stupid kitties make us very stressed.
But I have such specific memories of being in that little boardroom at the hotel playing this game and yelling at each other. It was so much fun.
Well, what's really funny about that game is it's so tense and it's all balancing the, you know, the power lines and the poles and the cats. And I remember all of us standing as far back as possible for the table out of fear that our breath might knock something over.
So good. So good.
And you can play that competitively or co-op.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, what's our winner here?
Our winner of this category is Cities. Yay, Cities. Again, because we talked about it. Like, this is a game that you can play at a very basic level with your kids of like, hey, the game's going to walk you through what to do, when to do it, how to do it. Or, hands off, let's all play competitively and try to do this, min-max it the best you can. It is the perfect distillation of a Phil Walker Harding game, which is family-friendly, but has a lot of depth to it if you want it to be there.
Sure.
It's a fantastic take on that. And it's a really cool art design, like unrelated to the mechanics, but like it looks really cool. It works really well in that way.
Nice.
All right. And then our listener's choice for this category, the listeners have chose Harmonies, which again was a big, big hit over the summer, sold out immediately. Asmodee and the sub-publisher, again, did a really good job of getting the game out there, republishing it. Second, third printings, having a ton of copies. It's easy to find now, which you don't always get with a game that sells out that fast.
Very true.
All right. So there you go. Cities and the listeners, Harmonies. Next up, the heavier games, best strategy game. So these are the big, chunky games that force you to think ahead and make decisions based on what you think is going to happen. So we have a few games here, because this is kind of our sweet spot. We have Slay the Spire, the board game, which is the brilliant interpretation of the video game Slay the Spire, which has been around for several years, as a cooperative board game. And the cooperative part is what really makes this interesting. We have Arx, the new one from Cole Worley, which is a trick-taking inspired Space 4X-ish style game with a sprawling campaign mode that you can attach to it through an expansion. Andromeda's Edge, which is the brilliant worker placement game based on Dwellings of Eldervale from Luke Laurie. SETI, the search for extraterrestrial life from CGE, which is a science fiction-ish near future game about the search for extraterrestrial life on nearby planets. Unconscious Mind, the fantastic interpretation of the history of psychotherapy and what that looks like and how thematically it developed over time. And then Windmill Valley, the follow-up to Barcelona from Danny Garcia about windmills and tulips. Just a beautiful, fun, off-the-beaten-path theme that has a lot of really cool things, including one of the most interesting rondel mechanics we've seen in several years. So lots of really cool stuff this year. Really good year for strategy games.
Yeah, a lot of times when we talk about strategy games or we talk about crunchy games, heavy games, a lot of times it kind of scares people away. People think spreadsheets, but really these games, especially for this year, so thematic and so such a variety of different themes and tactics and mechanics that kind of are come into play here, really kind of elevates the gameplay here. So we talked about Slay the Spire a lot, the board game. We've played the video game a lot, and it could have been a simple reimplementation. It could have just been like, oh, you're just a solo player and you're doing a thing. The co-op to that really adds something to the gameplay that is unique, and you really have to consider a whole second dimension, obviously your partner kind of in play. So it's no longer just about you, but about both of you and managing that kind of time and conflict is really challenging. And again, the game is great. And if you have not played Slay the Spire, you should definitely check it out. I think the second version is coming out this coming year. Arcs, again, we got amazing space travel from Leader Games. Artwork is really fun and dynamic. And then you bring in trick-taking. And it's just like, sure. But the trick-taking, in a lot of ways, plays like Race for the Galaxy, where you're choosing different actions and giving you an opportunity to follow or to take opposing actions. Excellent. Really nice. Andromeda's Edge is a game that we've all been heavily anticipating since we played Dwelling for Elderveil. And we just want Dwellings. That's all we wanted. We want a space version of Dwellings, and we would be fine. We would be happy. And this game comes out, and it is, in a lot of ways, again, depending on your point of view, better. It just, it Gaia Project, Dwellings of Elderveil. Like, the tracks are better. The dynamics are better. The dice interaction's better. And it's a beautiful, amazing production with a tremendous number of space races that you can play. So you do have an opportunity to play the game different all the time. And it's not just like a one and done kind of situation. And that was great. SETI, it's really kind of inspiring that they actually went there with this, because this could have certainly just been a sci-fi science fiction kind of game. But the fact that this game is based on the actual search for extraterrestrial life out there in the real science way that SETI, the space organization, is actually doing in the real world now, is so smart and fascinating, and such a risk to do that, because, when you play tabletop games, often it's like seen as a real nerd passion, and it is, and we're glad about it. And it's so nice to see that these brilliant people that are out there in all of these different fields to try to make contact with other life out there in the universe could actually have a fun, dynamic game that could highlight the great work that they do and all the challenges that they face. Brilliant, just like brilliant and smart, up and down, left and right. And I remember we went through the demo of this, and I was just like, they made a game about this. They actually made a game about this. Because again, like, if you grew up any level of interest in science, you always thought and wanted to see the real fun dynamic aspects to all this. And we can't imagine in our heads what all the science that goes into this and all the things that are happening out in space. This game kind of brings us down to a ground level, and I really definitely appreciate that throughout. Unconscious Mind was my hotly anticipated game of the year. It was a game based upon my field of study in psychology, and the game really does a great job doing really two things. First, it gives you the historic perspective of these, once again, scientists that came up with and around Freud and were exploring and understanding the different dynamics of human nature and psyche and mental health disorders, and how we can actually help those people based upon learning about the world in which they live in, and the culture and the different sciences that goes about. I think we take that for granted today that, like, oh, of course, people have challenges mentally and psychologically and socially and emotionally. But back then, this was brand new. And the idea that you could tackle and discuss and open up, perspectives was something that was radical at the time. And this game allows you to play out that kind of historical perspective. On top of which, you actually get to do, I guess, this dream analysis to open up the client from their own trauma and grief, and then allow that client to kind of heal, grow, and then provide you with, reputation points or special abilities to kind of benefit you and the other clients down the road. It is very thematic. Again, if you take it as a whole, I think it's a fascinating undertaking by Fantasia Games there, and I tremendously appreciate that. Windmill Valley, who knew that there was another great design after Barcelona? And to have, once again, Barcelona was this breath of fresh air. It was like, hey, do you like Euro games? Like, yeah, I like Euro games. Let's bring you back to a classic Euro game Feld style, where you could actually take actions that build on top of other actions and are really dynamic and at the same time very straightforward. And then to have this game come out and be like, okay, how about some more different dynamics, but yet the same ease and accessibility of gameplay? Brilliant. So really excited about all these games here. Can we give it to all of these games?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Nice. Everyone gets
best strategy of the game of the year. All the games.
They're all really good, man. It's been a good year for strategy games.
We went back and forth on this a lot before we hopped on the episode because it was just like, which game is the best? These are all good.
They're all very good. And again, like the thematic experience of this game makes these heavy strategy games playable, people. It's not just pictures and artwork. Like, it plays like how you would expect it to. And that's so smart. That takes an extra level of genius to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, seriously. And I think that's the bar at which we have to measure these things now. Like, if a game's not doing that, then it's not succeeding as a strategy game.
Yeah.
So our game picked for best strategy game, and again, this was incredibly close, so like any of these could be it. But we went with SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, from CGE. And it's just a, like everything you said, a perfect fit for this. It's a fantastic approach to this idea of the search for extraterrestrial life, but like jumping forward a few steps to like, what happens if we find it?
Yeah.
What does that look like? Uh-huh. What do we do? How do we respond? Where do we get the information from? Just, and thematically, it all flows together perfectly. So that is our pick for best strategy game, and listener's choice is the same thing, SETI. What? Listeners were all about SETI this year.
Excellent.
All right, next up, our best overlooked gem. So these are games that we enjoyed, that we discussed at length, and we feel like should be recognized, but aren't necessarily like high in the rankings on Board Game Geek, high in everybody else's top 10 lists, maybe our lists, but not everywhere else. We want to talk about them a little bit more. Windmill Valley, Chris, you just mentioned this one, but best strategy game. Danny Garcia, kind of building on that formula that really worked in Barcelona and giving us a new interesting theme outside of the typical themes, working within like the structure of what is a Euro game, but in a way that's more modern, but feels older, right? Like that perfect Lega sequel style approach to game design of like the Euro games that we all remember, but like in the formula that we recognize now as being good. Like modern mechanics, more streamlined, more direct, more interesting. Just a fantastic medium light level of Euro. Sankore, the Pride of Monza Musa. Fabio Lopiano coming back to the world and the style, worked on with Osprey Games when working with Ian O'Toole previously with Merv, with a much, much heavier game. Monza Musa is by far the heaviest game Lopiano has ever worked on. Feels almost like a Lacerda level of complexity and just to the point where it's almost abstracted out a little bit from the theme, but just a beautiful, beautiful production, fantastic game, wonderful puzzle. Came out way back in early January of this year, so not on a lot of lists, I feel like, at the end of the year, but well worth discussing. Creature Caravan is a game that kind of hit here towards the end of the year from Red Raven Games. And it's Ryan Lockett going back to more mechanical stuff. I feel like in recent years, Lockett has really focused on the story-driven things. We haven't had a lot of mechanical games from them. And Creature Caravan is a more card-driven, worker placement-driven game. Was on GameFound, but it's definitely something that like flew under my radar for sure.
Sure.
Until I picked it up as a game to play with my kids. And they've really just fell in love with it. And it, you know, Lockett's a genius. The game is genius.
Yes.
But it just feels like something from like 10 years ago, like City of Iron level, but like modernized and updated with all the mechanics that he's learned from over the years.
Very cool.
Really good. And then Defenders of the Wild, we've talked about recently on the podcast, Chris, you reviewed this one, as just an interesting spin on the cooperative kind of protection. And working within the systems of the game, we have designers here of like parks, as well as block by block. So kind of an interesting mix of game design, definitely on the lighter end of things. But a game that I know we've talked about several times, but I've not seen talked about much elsewhere.
Yeah, it's still a very challenging game. to play. And what's also very interesting about it is each player gets its own deck, and those decks have different creatures that you can play. And you also get to select which of the main character creatures of that particular faction you want to play as. So while it's a co-op, while it's basically playing one or two cards, it is certainly a challenging co-op game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So these are four wonderful games that we highly, you should play all of these. That's why they're overlooked gems.
Yes.
They are games that we highly recommend you track down that just mm-hmm. have not popped up enough elsewhere. The one we really want to elevate the most that we feel like has gotten the least attention that should get the most is Windmill Valley, though. Yes. Danny Garcia hit strong last year with Barcelona. Windmill Valley kind of snuck in on the back end of that. And I don't feel like enough people are talking about it as just a fantastic game. We haven't really talked about it much on the podcast ourselves. I know I reviewed it pretty recently. It was either 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. On episode 506, and I gave it a buy because it feels like Barcelona but in a different theme, a different layout, a different style, different mechanics, but it has the same vibe to it. Like you mentioned this before, like it's like throwback to that Stefan Feld style of Euro game but in a different perspective, and that's exactly what it is, and it's perfect.
Excellent.
So,
yeah,
that is our overlooked gem for this year.
Yeah. Boards and Dice did it again, mm-hmm. and they've been knocking them out of the park with really innovative game design and really fantastic production.
Yep. All right. So for the listener's choice on this category, we did not pick just one because, and here's what literally happened, of all the dozens of votes we got, no single game got the majority of votes.
Wow.
and part of that's like, you say overlooked gem, people aren't going to pick out the same game. So there are five games that got multiple votes, but about the same amount. We're going to run them down real quick. And this, honestly, I think it's more fun because it gives you a few games that I honestly had not heard of almost any of these. I heard of one. And just things you can go check out. So, first up, Wondrous Creatures, designed by Yom CW and Bad Comic Games. This is a bunch of different interesting things going on here, but it is a worker placement style game with 100 plus fantastic creatures. So you're exploring these different potential types of creatures, fairly highly ranked on Board Game Geek, and just recently jumped into the hotness as a game that people are finally like, wait, is this good? Apparently it's good. Railways of the Lost Atlas is a rail system development game. You're playing on different maps every time. It's 18XX style. You look at pictures and it's got all the different grids and maps, but you are developing and building out the map rather than working with the map, which is a different take on an 18XX style game. We have Castle Combo, which is the one I had heard of. I've seen this on a few lists. It's an open drafting game where you're drafting people from lower and upper cities to create a valuable house. You're pulling people from different parts of the city to kind of create the most valuable, overall tableau yourself. Very quick, accessible type of drafting tableau building game. Forges of Ravenshire is you're running a forge, and the picture is of a badger with a hammer, which is perfect.
Yes.
Badger with a hammer is great.
I've seen it.
So you got four rounds and you're trying to build up these various different things, complete different contracts, build different guild members. So it's your typical production based, you're trying to complete different contracts over time thing, but it works really well within the context of the different types of things you're doing here that's unique to this particular theme. It was on Kickstarter previously. And then finally, we have The Cubes of Europe, which is a 9-card Euro game. It takes 15 minutes. Looks to be a print and play from Ben Huntley. And multiple people said, hey, check this game out. I had not heard of it. But it is inspired by the castles of Burgundy, according to the designer, and it is designed to distill all that down to a solo game that has, again, just 9 cards and is as efficient and streamlined as possible, which sounds fascinating to me. I'm going to check this out for sure.
Yeah, so. No, I think these are great. I'm really appreciative that all of these are on here.
It's cool. Like, I... you know, we put up, this is the first time we've done this poll. Mm-hmm. Like in the past, we just kind of like, here's our best. But this year, like, hey, why don't we ask people what they think? And I don't know what I expected for this category, but we got so many different recommendations from so many different types of games. All five of these look great. Like researching them, I'm like, I want to try all of these. So
yeah, no, we need a list too. So this is our list of things that we need, that we overlooked and we need to come back to them.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm going to check out all these games for sure.
Mm-hmm.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so moving on to the next category, best crowdfunding campaign. So these are games that ran campaigns in 2024. And how we measure that is which campaigns were the most interesting in terms of what they're offering, which campaigns were the best communicated, which ones were the most clearly visualized and illustrated. In the past, I think this was best Kickstarter. Now it's best crowdfunding campaign because it could be on BackerKit or GameFound or Kickstarter. It's kind of evenly split these days. But which of these are we the most excited about based on what they showed us? So these games don't exist yet. Several of these can be played.
Mm-hmm.
Several of them we have played or demoed, depending on like what stage of development they're in. But none of them are actually published and available just yet.
Sure.
So, first up, we have Luthier. This is the game about making violins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what this is about? this is from the developers of Distilled, which is a game about making whiskey. And now they're like, now you're making musical instruments. So you are crafting different musical instruments for patrons. Like people hire you, build them. There's worker placement, there's hidden bidding. There's a bunch of stuff going on here. This campaign had all sorts of stuff. We honestly, to be perfectly honest and straightforward, we made fun of it a little bit because it had some ridiculous over the top pledge levels, but there was a lot of stuff here. A lot of things you could choose how you wanted to opt into it. So it was fun. Galactic Cruise is the big sprawling Euro that was very much designed in the, this is a Lacerda, but not a Lacerda style. So it's got the kind of the big coffin style box. It's got the beautiful artwork, similar to like, you know, Eagle Griffin's production. It's complicated. It's long, it's strategic. They've been running this around conventions for about 2 years now. So everybody and their mother has demoed this game if you've been in a convention. But it just ran the Kickstarter campaign in 2024. So that was a lot of fun. Huang is an interesting one because this is not a new game. This was a re-implementation, the third re-implementation of Reiner Knizia's classic Tigris and Euphrates system. But now it's the Warring States period of ancient China. And it's based a little bit on the Yellow and Yangtze version, but the developer here is Phalanx, who does amazing, amazing reproductions of all the games. And most of the games they do are just like reproductions of old games. A lot of times war games. And this is war game-ish in the sense that it's a little abstract. So production level-wise, just fantastic, wonderful, over-the-top. You know, if you love Tigris and Euphrates or Yellow and Yangtze or just wanted to get copies of those and they're out of print, this was a great chance to do that. Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere RPG was huge. Biggest Kickstarter campaign of all time. I think they finally crossed that threshold at the end.
Crazy.
Many, many millions of dollars.
Brilliant. Right? Brilliant.
So much money from Brotherwise Games in working with Dragonsteel, Brandon Sanderson's production company. And the thing that was brilliant about this campaign is when they previewed it and they were giving people a sense of it, they were like, it's the Stormlight Archive RPG, which is a particular book series that Brandon Sanderson's worked on. And then a new book just came out for like in December this month. And then when they launched it, literally the day of, they're like, just kidding. It's everything in the Cosmere, which is like
wow.
Sanderson's like multiverse that all his books live in. So they're like, next year you're getting Mistborn, and later you're getting Elantris, and later you're getting, you know, Steelheart. Like, you're getting all this stuff. It's all there. We've built it out for everything. And people are like, seriously? Oh my gosh. So you could back the campaign. You could back different levels of the campaign. You could back additional materials for it. There's a Discord channel. You could jump in immediately during the campaign and start playing with some of the campaign materials they've already released, which I've been in there in the Discord, like participating in that, which has been fantastic. And just like full disclosure, I'm a huge fan of the Cosmere stuff. I've been reading Brandon Sanderson's book since his first novel, Elantris, back in 2003. So it was not just like a really good RPG campaign. It was expensive, but it was a lot of good stuff. But it was just really well run and really well communicated, which is great. And then lastly, we have here World Order, which is the new game from the developers of Hegemony, which is our game of the year last year.
Yes.
So this is automatically on our radar. Great new game about kind of, again, the political aspects. You know, Hegemony's, it's political, but it's also economical. World Order is strictly political and looking at how the world is structured and how we interact with each other politically and, internationally. All that research that they've done with Hegemony applied here. Fantastic development, and a lot of transparency around how the game was developed. So, yeah, five fantastic crowdfunding campaigns, a lot of good communication across all of them. Exciting stuff this year.
Yeah, no, and we really appreciate that. I think it's these, we really look at all the crowdfunding campaigns that come out and kind of dig into them in detail. Obviously, in the past, this was more of an actual serious problem that we had to look at. But now really the bar has been raised, and what people are looking for now more than ever is an appreciation and connection with the designers and the publishers here in a way in which that they can kind of help contribute and connect with the campaign, and also for the campaign itself to be clear and communicate what the game is going to be like. And that's not easy, you know, taking something that's in cardboard and something that's mechanics that sometimes feel very abstracted, and trying to communicate that to like a broad audience. So when these campaigns come out and they are this good and they're offering this kind of quality, all of them should be recognized and appreciated across the board.
Yeah, 100%. So our pick this year is a little off kilter for us. Ooh. We typically do board games, but Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere RPG. And again, maybe it's my, like, I'm coming in here like a freight train being like, this is brilliant. But I just feel like that campaign was so well run, so well communicated, so much interesting material. The surprise at the beginning was such a like out of left field but fun thing that they did. And Brotherwise just runs good campaigns. They always have.
Yes.
So that's our pick this year.
Absolutely.
All right. And the listener's choice of the best crowdfunding campaign, people were really digging the giant violin piece you get with Luthier.
Nice.
Luthier was great. Like, and it really did break it down into different levels of like,
sure,
do you want all the crazy fancy stuff? Here you go. Do you just want the game? Here you go. So I think that's important, and a lot of campaigns don't do that very well.
It's true.
All right. Next up, we have best cooperative game. This is a new category for us. We don't typically do this one, but we had a lot of requests from the listener, so of course we adjusted accordingly. First up, we have Slay the Spire, the board game. Well, we talked about this under Best Strategy Game. Fantastic implementation of Slay the Spire, the video game, as a board game. Because it's cooperative, that makes it different, that makes it interesting. We have The Gang. This is a new game that we didn't have a chance to really dig into as much until recently, just because it was hard to find. People were really excited about this one. It is a cooperative spin on Texas Hold'em.
Very cool.
Which is such a cool idea. I love that. From Cosmos. That one is up there as well. Marvel United Multiverse, the third release of the Marvel United series, added a ton of new mechanics and ideas and different things, especially the Galactus set, for those who backed it on Kickstarter. And then Bomb Busters. Bomb Busters being just an interesting new game that does a lot of cool, different things in the cooperative space. You are trying to defuse these different bombs. Hisashi Hayashi, it's mission-based. similar to like The Crew. Mm-hmm. So there's 66 different missions, different challenges to kind of play through, and they kind of level up in difficulty, which is kind of becoming a very popular way to do cooperative games.
Yes.
And I'm fully on board with that, because that's the perfect way for me to introduce them to my kids and my students, leveling up in difficulty instead of just dumping up a big heavy game on them.
Which happens literally all the time, unfortunately.
Yeah. Some co-op games are like, it's hard. You're like, cool. Everybody's unhappy now. They all lost.
So. Yeah. I mean, that's what co-op games are supposed to be, right? You're supposed to lose the vast majority of the time. But if it can gear up, if it can scaffold throughout its gameplay, then you have something that legitimately you can get to the table and not feel like it's babying you along the way, but also feel like you have, I guess, a significant challenge in front of you.
I think that's the best way to do it.
Yes.
Honestly, like, I love Pandemic. I think it's a great system, but I think too often you throw Pandemic in front of somebody, and if they have a bad draw, if they don't understand the rules right away, game hits them upside the head and they're like, this game sucks. You're like, no, you just did bad that first time. Try again. And they're like, I don't want to try again. That was terrible. I'm like, fair.
Stop punching me in the face.
Yeah.
Stop hitting yourself.
It's not fun to lose so fast. Yeah. Scaffolding the difficulty is a great way to do it.
Yes. The crew knew what they was doing quite well.
Yeah. And a lot of games have followed that, which is great. All right. So for our pick this year is, for best cooperative game, is Slay the Spire, the board game.
There you go.
And for multiple reasons. One, it's a great co-op game. It just works as a co-op system. Two, it takes a game that was not co-op, it was single player only, and it figures out a way to make it multiplayer in a way that makes the game better and more interesting. And I was super skeptical. You can go back in time like 2-3 years to when this campaign ran, and you can hear me say, this sounds dumb. And guess what? Spoiler, this is my number one game of 2024. Wow. So, because it just, like, and my personal list will be up next week on the website and on Patreon, but this game, it does everything so interestingly, and the co-op really just nails it. It makes the game more, it just does so many things that the solo, like, you can play this game solo and it just feels like the video game. And then at a certain point, you're like, why am I not just playing the video game? But cooperatively, it adds so many new nuances and mechanics and layers to the game that aren't there. So it's great. It's a perfect way to do it.
It's such a smart idea. And it's really a credit to the game that you have this video game that sold millions of copies of the game. And it's like won a tremendous number of awards. And they had the guts to go, that's good, but we're going to do it better. And the co-op, and I will say this, it is better than the video game.
Yeah. No, it's so good. Like, to the point where I'm like, with Slay the Spire 2 coming out, I'm like, you said this before. And I was like, that's perfect. Is there a co-op version? Are they going to do co-op in the video game?
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be so good.
Yeah.
Because it works so well. And I, you know, who knows if the hubris of the designers is like, no, this is our version. But
that's right.
Yeah, co-op Slay the Spire is perfect. All right, and we have the listeners' pick. It is The Gang.
Oh,
which again, just like a really cool, interesting cooperative version of Texas Hold'em. You're betting on how good you think your hand's going to be related to everybody else, and you're all trying to do that effectively based on what's coming out. So you're not just trying to win. You're trying to work with each other to figure out whose hands are the best silently. Such a cool, interesting idea, and the game just really plays it out really well.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Next up, best 2.0 release. So how we define this is games that re-implement, update, or iterate on an existing design of some kind. So these are not sequels necessarily, although they might be. They are games that take an existing game and they retheme it in a way that makes the game different and interesting in unique ways, or revise it or update it in different ways. So all of our nominations this year are rethemes, but they add mechanics, they change mechanics in ways that make the game different, and in every case that we're talking about, better, in our opinion. So these are 2.0s of existing games. First up, we have Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle-earth, which is a 2.0 of Seven Wonders Duel. Takes the formula from Seven Wonders, puts it in the Lord of the Rings universe, and it tweaks things in such a way it gets rid of the point cards and gives you a map in which you're trying to manage area control elements. It has the ring push and pull, and it has the different icons that represent the different factions that you're trying to interact with. Very interesting way to spin that and make the game feel like more of a tug of war in all three different fields instead of just the two. Endeavor Deep Sea takes Endeavor, which was a game that we have many problems with. You can go back in time and hear all of our problems with that game. And it takes it on a deep sea adventure, where you are still exploring, still representing different countries and nations, but now not necessarily weaving in issues of racism and slavery and colonialism that were problematic in the original game. Wormspan, which is Wingspan with dragons, which by itself sounds cool, but it does change the action selection mechanism, where now the number of actions you have every round relates to the number of eggs you have, which can change, can be updated. You can get more if you play the game well enough, which fundamentally changes everything about this game, which is great. And then Andromeda's Edge, which is Dwellings of Eldervale in space, with a bunch of other stuff added on because of crowdfunding, but most of it's good. So there you go. Four games. All of them very good updates of existing games, many of which were on our top 100 already.
Yeah, no, this is a great year for all these 2.0 releases. And none of these are just like, you know, new artwork or some kind of pasted on expansion that's kind of, you know, squeezed in there. All of these really do take the game to a new level and do different things and provide a really different type of experience while staying true to the core of the game that we love.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot of really cool, fun stuff. And like, this is my favorite category every year, I think, because I feel like sometimes people get down on these games because they're like, oh, it's just that game, but updated. I'm like, but that's cool. And I think that's something unique about the board game field, is that we can take stuff we've already developed, iterate on it, make a new version and re-release it and be like, okay, it's like this other thing you like, but now we've tweaked it and updated it and adjusted it and based, you know, all your feedback, here's this version.
Yeah.
And we're still comfortable doing that in a way that other fields, you know, like film and TV, they can't really do that in the same way. And video games, it's so expensive that they really don't want to do that in that way.
Sure.
So for us this year, the biggest 2.0 release, and it kind of came out of nowhere at the end of the year, was Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle Earth.
Yes.
Just brilliant re-implementation, fixed the very small number of issues that I had with that game and made it just so much more interesting. Theme, regardless of theme, although the theme definitely helped.
Yeah, no, I think certainly you talk about the theme, and the theme certainly helps. I mean, most people out there like Lord of the Rings, but even if you don't, I will say that the tension between the three tug-of-war tracks is so exponentially better and more dynamic and more tense than Seven Wonders Duel, which I've played a tremendous amount. I own all the expansions for it. Great game. Love it. Was in the top 10. And this is just like, it didn't seem like there would be any room at all to make this game better other than, hey, do you like this artwork better? Or this like this IP better, and they actually made the game better, and that didn't seem possible for this. The other games, yes, they seem like they certainly could have lost a couple of things for the better, and this just didn't make any kind of real sense, and it did.
Yeah. Yep. No, it's wonderful, and so much so that the listeners agree with us. Lord of the Rings: Duel for Middle Earth is also the listener's choice.
Very nice. Good job, people.
Yeah, we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have Best Solo Game. These are games that play really well with one person only. This year was an interesting year for solo games. There were not as many like solo only games, which is honestly what we're often looking for. If you look at our awards for last year, we had a lot of games that were just like explicitly designed for just one person. This year, a little bit less of that. Overall, just in the industry, not necessarily bad, like a lot of really good solo implementations and versions and expansions, but the stuff that came out here was really, really good. Yes. So we just had like fewer options to pick from, though. First up, we have I, Napoleon, which is a game from GMT Games in which it is a card-driven role-playing style game, which you're playing through the life of Napoleon Bonaparte, which I know many people hear that and they're like, ugh, what? Why would I do that? But here you have a 1 to 5 hour solo game from Ted Reisier and GMT Games that is digging through like the life of Napoleon, what he went through, his different levels, and you're making decisions along the way to kind of decide what works, what doesn't along the way. The next one up is Slay the Spire, which, you know, we talked about not being ideal as a solo experience, but it's still like, it is Slay the Spire, the video game, but now a board game. That is the solo version. It's a brilliant video game, and it works well as cardboard as well. Harmonies, we talked about this earlier with our Best Family game. This is a fantastic abstract game, and in my opinion, it's better as a solo game. Paperback, 10th Anniversary Edition. Paperback is an all-time great deck-building game. The 10th Anniversary Edition introduces new solo modes, which add a lot of new mechanics and ways to approach the game and play them, which is fantastic. It's admittedly a little harder to find this game, and it's a little more expensive than the base version, but the solo versions in this game, I liked the original. This one really amplifies it a lot. And then lastly, we have Rome, Fate of an Empire, which was listed as a solo game of the month on GameFound, designed by Joe Klipfel, who also designed Gloomhaven, Gloomholden, which became Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs, which is like the very enormous version of the 18 card solo game of Gloomhaven. And this is a game all about the leading the Roman Empire. There's a lot of stuff. It comes in like a VHS style, like clamshell case. Fantastic ancient Rome Empire card game. I think it was hard to find for a little bit. I think they then published a bunch more of them. It's easier to find now. I did back this. I had a chance to play it. It's fantastic. And it's the solo game of the month is a great line of games, except a lot of them are decent. Some are not. Some are great. It's hard to know which are good. And then by the time you know which ones are good, maybe they're hard to get. So you don't necessarily want to back all of them. But this one in particular stood out as one of the better ones. So there you have it. A bunch of different solo games for this year.
Excellent. Yeah, no, a really good list, especially the games designed specifically for that. And yeah, I've played a couple of these and they're great.
Yeah. And like, again, speaking to that point, like you say, designed specifically for that, I think we do take that into account. I think that's important. Like, and it's not that we just like want to pick a game that's designed specifically for solo. It's that games designed specifically for solo play tend to be best for solo play, right? Sure. We talked about this last year with all the great games that came out, like Witchcraft and Mr. President. This year it's I, Napoleon. That's our pick. Because it is a one player only game. That's the only way to play it. You feel like you're stepping into the shoes of Napoleon. The history really bleeds through. It's a GMT game, so it's just got all this depth and background and the playbook that comes in the box. It's a bit more of a leap, right? It takes more work to get into. It's a longer game. It's a little bit harder to find because it's GMT and it's sometimes out of print, but it just really nails that experience. You feel like you're living in that world.
Agreed.
And the listener's choice, again, a great experience. I've played this game more solo than I have co-op, and I've had fun every time, is Slay the Spire, the board game.
What?
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. It's the thing is, if you have the video game, it's kind of the same. But it is really good. Like, if you want something analog and not digital, this is about as good as you're going to get going from digital to analog in terms of interpretation. The game is perfect for that. And the setup is not crazy. It doesn't take too long to play. Honestly, I feel like I could go through a run of Slay the Spire, the board game, in about as much time as the video game. The numbers are just smaller. That's it.
Very nice.
All right. Two more categories here. We're getting towards the end. Next up, we have Best Expansion. These are all the games that were expanded with new cool stuff. We have Gaia Project, The Lost Fleet. Didn't think we were going to get this. It's been like 7 or 8 years since this game came out, and we got a new expansion with new content, new factions, new mechanics in the game. Hegemony, Lead Your Class to Victory. Crisis Control, so kind of the This did come out with the Kickstarter if you had it last year, but for those who didn't, it came out this year. Arx, The Blighted Reach. Arx launching over the summer. The Blighted Reach, kind of the must-have expansion with the campaign elements. Obsession Characters expansion came out also over the fall. Barcelona, Paseo de Gracia, adding a cool new mechanic with pedestrians to the city streets of Barcelona, which I think is an important element if you're talking about building a city. Unconscious Minds Nightmares. So, talking about dreams and interpreting dreams, what about the nightmares that people have?
That's true.
Unconscious Minds, I keep saying Unconscious Minds, but it's Unconscious Mind, adds that kind of element to it. And then War of the Ring, the card game, Fire and Swords, adds a bunch of new stuff, including a 6-player mode with 2 new factions and a bunch of new cards and options to play it. Epic 2-player game, which takes about 3 to 4 hours. So now you can play a card game version of War of the Ring that is about as long as War of the Ring. So many cool, interesting, different takes and expansions this year. Very good stuff.
Excellent stuff this year, for sure.
Yeah. So I know the one that stuck out for us that really kind of added to the game the most was Unconscious Mind, the Nightmares expansion.
Yeah, a game that's already very thematic and very challenging, bringing, again, most of the historical context to play. The actual treatment of the patients comes into play with this, I guess, the actual mind and these 3 different sections where you're dealing with the passion and the freedom and the growth. But we know that a lot of the nightmares that we have are based upon psychological challenges and trauma and things like that. So it makes perfect sense to bring in the Nightmare expansion so that the game actually plays different. It has different dynamics to come to play, especially those 3 different areas. But don't fear, even though, yes, there's a lot of fear. The expansion also comes with pets. So there's therapy pets that come along to help out you as a psychotherapist, help your clients. So very dynamic, very keeping with the theme, adds a lot to the gameplay. And I would almost recommend it. Again, new players, obviously a little more challenged, but I always would recommend it with the Nightmare expansion.
Yeah, I feel like the first time we set it up, you're like, oh, this is the Nightmare expansion. We'll maybe do this next time. I'm like, oh, but shouldn't there be nightmares?
There
like,
should
isn't
be
that
nightmares.
The whole point? Thematically, like people have nightmares more than they have dreams, like, right?
Yeah, when you play the base version, all the dreams are very pleasant looking, even though they're very like consciously abstract.
Yeah, which is the best part of that game, honestly. It's the artwork on the dream cards. It's so fantastic. Like nightmare cards, what do those look like?
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, it's great. It's like Dixit, but twisted.
That's right.
All right, great. Best expansion, Unconscious Mind on Nightmares. Listener's choice for this one is Gaia Project, The Lost Fleet, which I also love. Gaia Project, one of my favorite games. This just adds a bunch of new stuff to that, which is great.
Excellent.
All right, last category, our game of the year. This is it, folks. BGA's game of the year. We're going to do it.
Everyone's listening.
Hopefully. bunch of nominees this year. We have, running through the list, Arx, Cole Worley's epic space game with trick-taking elements. Slay the Spire, the board game. A near-pitch-perfect re-implementation of Slay the Spire, the video game, as a cooperative card game. The Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle-earth, updating Seven Wonders Duel, one of the greatest 2-player games of all time, and making it better somehow. SETI, The Search for Extraterrestrial Life, fantastic science near-future game, exploration of the solar system. Star Wars Unlimited, we haven't talked about this one yet, but a fantastic collectible card game that really like upends and rethinks how we approach quick, accessible 2-player dueling games. Yes, it's collectible, but mechanically it is fantastic, and they've done a wonderful job of releasing 2-player starter kits that are really fun and accessible and interesting, and that's all I've played with my son, and he loves this game. It's one of my most played games of 2024. Dune, War for Arrakis, the designers of War of the Ring taking a spin at Dune and just knocking it out of the park. Simon developing just a beautiful version of this, but mechanically just really capturing what makes Dune, Dune. Andromeda's Edge, one of the best worker placement games around, period. Dwellings of Eldervale, now updated for space with a bunch of new mechanics, a bunch of new ideas, a bunch of new ways to approach the game. Sancori, the Pride of Monza Musa. Again, Fabio Lopiano's biggest, heaviest, most interesting thematic game yet. And then Unconscious Mind. Chris, you've talked about this a bunch. Just a fantastic exploration of the development of psychotherapy from a thematic standpoint and mechanically just doing so many interesting things across multiple different areas of the game board. So I just feel like it's one of our better slates in a while. And I don't know when in the year I kind of reached this point of like, hey, 2024 was really good.
Yes.
I feel like it was like October and I'm like, wait a second, this is going to be hard. So I think when we were doing our top 100 and I realized like five or six of these games had made it into my top 100, I'm like, oh, this was a good year. So here we go.
Yeah, and I think over the past 11 years, there's been, obviously, based on the industry, there's been years where it's like, they're all deck builders. They're all area control games.
Right.
They're all miniature games. Or this year, for sure, they are very different from each other.
Yeah.
From, you know, two-player, you know, slugfest to, like, massive, dynamic, epic space operas, whether it's Andromeda's Edge or Dune or Star Wars, and some nice, really crunchy games with Sankora and Unconscious Mind. And then also, surprisingly enough, a video game that became a board game that became one of our Game of the Year nominees.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously leader games, which more or less kick everything out of the park. Arx, like, I think everyone knew what that was going to be, and it came out, and it was like, oh, no, this is very good. This is excellent.
I feel like Arx would be doing, I mean, we'll get to it, but, like, Arx is a game that almost suffers in the broader scheme of things because they split it up from its expansion.
Sure.
They're like, oh, here's the game, and here's an expansion that makes the game so much more.
Yes.
And I think that really pushes it into a weird category, whereas Root didn't have that, but it's still such a good game.
Yeah. There's just a lot of good stuff here. And then obviously SETI, which we've already talked about.
Yeah.
Just being a nice, straightforward science game that's very crunchy, but also offers some really excellent twists at the end of the game that you do not expect coming into it.
Right.
So I think this is a tremendous list, a tremendous year. I think it was in our top 10 of 10s or something along those lines of like the last 10 years, the last 10, right? And we talked about the last 10 years of like, what were the best games of those last 10 years? And I think 2024 is up there with the tops.
I really, honestly, I haven't done the math yet. I think this might be, at least at the moment, the most representative year in my top lists. Like almost every game here in this Game of the Year nomination list is in among my favorite games of all time now.
Wow,
like,
that's great.
So many good games this year. And like we've talked about this in the last few weeks, we haven't played as many games this year because we're doing all the academic stuff, we're traveling a lot. Like we're not like digging in and trying to play every game under the sun this year, which is good because you don't need to do that. But at the same time, being able to drill into all these particular games and find so many good things, and this isn't even all the amazing games. Like our other nomination lists, we have other games we didn't even nominate for Game of the Year. We have, like, you know, Windmill Valley, and we have Cities and Cast, you know, the Harmony is like, these are games that didn't even make it to this point, and those are all very good as well.
Sure.
Just a really strong year this year.
Very much so. And very different games, going back to that earlier point.
Yeah.
So,
very diverse, which is
so
great.
Really, again, if you had a game convention and you just brought these games to all the different tables, I think everyone would be satisfied without question. Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right, Anthony. All right. So that leaves us to our Game of the Year for 2024. It is
Andromeda's Edge.
What?
I know. Like, and here's the thing. Like, you go back to our most anticipated of 2024. This was near the top.
Yes.
It was, I think, the second or third game we mentioned. No. I take that back. It was the first game on our list.
There you go.
I was like, it's either Arx or this one. It was this one. Yes. Andromeda's Edge, number one most anticipated game of 2024. And it delivered.
Yes.
And, you know, it to some degree, we were like, oh, we knew because Dwellings was so good. But that's not always guaranteed, right? You take an existing game, you add a bunch of stuff, you change the theme, you develop it for 4 years. maybe the game becomes bloated, it becomes overwhelming, it becomes too much, maybe it doesn't work quite as well in the new format, right? Like, I remember when they turned the Conan game into Batman, and it was suddenly terrible. Like, Conan was great, Batman was terrible. You can break it. You can break it by overdoing it. Andromeda's Edge did not break it. It was really good.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary production. It was an extraordinary campaign. And Anthony and I have talked about this a lot, in fact, about this game. We've played this together. We've played this separately. And there's a lot of different, you know, player counts. There's a lot of different factions playing this. So we really, you know, drilled down into this. And my initial takeaway was, hey, Anthony, this is a glorified worker placement game.
Yeah.
and I was like, but wait, it is a glorified worker placement game in the best way possible, because you're able to engage with all of these other factions and players in a epic space opera, while at the same time, you're not having to kind of overcome like an endless number of rules and dynamics to be able to move your ship one space.
Right.
So the glorified part of this is it's glorified in the best way. It's glorious to play at the table. And you really feel like your faction is uniquely yours, and the actions that you're taking are very dynamic. And the fact that you not only have to worry about your opponents at the table, but also all of these different AI aliens that are coming across Andromeda's Edge really adds a lot to the gameplay. And it surpasses Dwellings of Eldervale in so many different ways. I mean, you get to really dive deep and enjoy building up those different tracks on your own personal board, but also building all those different modules so that you can create your own alien civilization tech tree, which I really like. I enjoy a good tech tree, and this game gives you that feel, not a full-blown civilization game, but it gives you that feel of building up that tech tree, benefiting from the different technologies that come into play, benefiting from the different aliens that come into play, and working around, or sometimes in concert with the other players at the table, to kind of really push the frontier a little bit further. This plays at all player counts quite good. And at the same time, because the aliens that come out are different, and because the modules that come out are, there's a lot of them, and they come out different times and places, and the different combinations of aliens that you play also adds to a different dynamic. Fantastic. Up and down, you know, no red flags with this game whatsoever. Everyone's going to have a good time. It's approachable. You can play it. You can play it and enjoy it. And you can play it for, like, you know, deep strategy. So it's certainly one of those games that's easy entry, but gives you that kind of long-term kind of complex thought. So after you get done playing this game, you're like, well, what if I would have went there? What if I would have taken these actions first to kind of really, you know, benefit off my special ability? And that's really what you wanted as far as a takeaway from a game. So in an industry that has TI4 and Eclipse, Andromeda's Edge does quite a good job to own its own place in that kind of epic space opera universe.
Yeah, it's the Euro version of that, yeah, without being like overwhelmingly exhausting, like a Voidfall.
Yes,
which I love.
Yes,
but this is so much more accessible, you know, minus the box size.
That's right.
It's again a big stupid box, but the game is brilliant. And it's perfect. Like, I was really hoping for this. We had Dwellings, played it a couple times. I loved it. Could never find a copy. And then Andromeda's Edge went up on GameFound. I'm like, I hope this is good, because I'm going to pay a bunch of money for it, and I'm excited for it to come. But if it's not as good as Dwellings, I'm going to be really upset. Guess what? It was as good. In fact, it's better. It's our game of the year.
Fantastic.
All right. So last thing here before we head out for this week, for the year, really, is our Listener's Choice Game of the Year. This is a game we have not formally talked about on the podcast, because we just got our copy of it at PAX, picked it up there for the first time. I think it's the first time it was available in North America. And that is SETI, The Search for Extraterrestrial Life. We have talked about it several times throughout our awards here. We gave it our best strategy game, so it's not out of nowhere. I have played it a few times. But by far, of all these categories, It is the category in which the listeners were most unified. It got like 60% of the votes.
Wow.
And part of me was just like, how did all these people get the game? Because it wasn't really available till recently. And I know we have listeners all over the world. So maybe they were at Essen or they got it in Europe earlier. But it is, again, it's one of those games. I don't know if we'll formally review it on the podcast just because of our schedule and timeline. But I will say I had a blast with it. I played it after PAX many, many times here in the last like 3-4 weeks. It is on my personal top 10 list now. We'll probably talk about it more in the future, but I'm very excited that listeners chose this. And I feel like if you and I had both played it, maybe it would have been a different conversation with Andromeda's Edge. Although Andromeda's Edge is, I think, still highly ranked, more highly ranked on my list. But yeah, SETI's great. And it's nice to see CGE kind of firing on all cylinders again this year.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I'm going to get to this table pretty soon. And, you know, we want to give a shout out to all of you that participated for our listener's choice. Made such a difference. And for everybody out there, I know you and I, Anthony, have benefited greatly from so many people bringing games to the table, so many people teaching us games at the table throughout the year. And as we start a new year, I think one of the kind of tradition, old Lang Syne, is to kind of think back about all the people that we may have forgotten along the way. Thank you, everyone, for your great, wonderful opportunities to get great games to the table. Thank you for allowing us to join your table. Thank you for allowing us on your podcast player for this last year. And for this next coming year, do what you always do best. Bring great games to the table and welcome somebody new. Maybe somebody who you haven't seen in quite some time. Maybe some new gamer that's coming to your meetup group for the very first time. Save a seat for somebody else at the table and welcome them into the great tabletop industry and hobby that we love. Until next time, or until next year, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Woohoo!
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.